Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, there's a line open for you right now at 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, tell us about the topics this time.
Yes, how fast does the Grim Reaper walk? That's what we're trying to figure out. The Grim Reaper, you know, the guy with the
Yeah, I know the Grim Reaper. We all know that.
We're going to talk about a very interesting
study. He doesn't run.
We have figured out how fast he walks.
Right.
And if you can outwalk him, hey.
Okay.
You're going to live forever. And then we're going to talk about the new issues with hospitals that Medicare is talking about facing penalties for readmissions for patients, what that means to you and what it means for us in the future.
Important information. How about our recipe?
Roast beef pitas. What it is it's looking at comfort food. I kind of think winter is the time for comfort food, although the fact is summer and fall and spring can also be their way. But roast beef and pitas, we've got what I think is an excellent recipe that you may want to try. Simple but delish.
Coming up. Again, 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Traverse City, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, guys.
How can
we help?
My husband
and I are weekly listeners, and we love your healthy tips and humorous banter, especially.
Well, thank you
thank
so
you
much.
Very much.
Thank you.
So my problem is I'm biting my tongue and my cheek while I sleep. This started about 2 months ago, and now it's been happening like every 10 nights or so. It's always on my left side of my mouth, and the sleeping position doesn't seem to be a factor. I've tried, you know, both sides and my back, my stomach, and I seem to bite my tongue or my cheek in any of those positions.
I bet I know what Zorba's going to say, but
No, please. No. But if you know what I'm going to say, I mean, that takes away the fun. So go ahead. Give the advice.
Well, you're going to say that she bit it the first time and that these reoccurrences are because of the irritation that's there.
Well, that certainly can be a possibility. So was that part of it? Is that what happened?
I don't think so. I don't feel any swelling.
Who knows better, you or Zorba or me?
Sorry about that, Tom, but I don't feel any swelling, and my cheek is totally healed. So,
bummer. Any dental work recently? Any work that you've had done in your mouth?
No, I haven't had any dental work.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any TMJ pain in your jaw when you bite into things like apples?
I do not.
This has gone on for how long?
Just about a couple months. Uh-huh. The first time it occurred, I had a stressful trip, and I remember taking a half of an Ambien to help me sleep that evening. Mm-hmm. And I blamed it on that. And then after that, I thought I'll be fine because I don't ever take Ambien. And then the second time it happened, I thought, whoa, and now it's just happening periodically.
Right. And those things, I mean, things like that bruxism, which is this clenching of the teeth, can happen over and over again. I've got a couple of recommendations. Sometimes I think we get into, if you will, a habit of doing this. We may start out with, as you said, with a stressful event, and then we're in bed and we just sort of, you know, our brains are working one way, we're sleeping another way, and we're sort of reliving not the stressful event, but how we responded to the stressful event. So I have a suggestion that for 2 to 4 weeks that you actually try a medication called gabapentin. You'd have to get it from your doctor. It's a prescription-only drug, 300 milligrams at bedtime. It changes the architecture of sleep. And that's how it works. It's a commonly used medication that's given for chronic pain, pain disorders that are neuropathic in nature. And it often restores sleep for people, and it becomes a little bit more normative. And I think what you actually have is more of a sleep problem than a dental problem. I think Tom's idea was great. You had an irritation. That might have really started it. But when the irritation goes away, and if the irritation didn't start it, then we have to look at something else. And I think we should look primarily at sleep. I think that's what I would try.
I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you so much for listening. And thanks for those very kind comments that you made.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
1-800-462-7413. It is, of course, toll-free. 1-800-462-7413. 462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to Norman, Oklahoma now. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
So I have this ongoing and fairly baffling problem with IBS.
IBS, irritable bowel syndrome.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it seems to only affect me when I go to work. I work for a university, so some of my time I spend working, sitting in an office, doing administrative work, and some days I am out teaching in a classroom all day. And when I'm teaching, it's fine. On the weekends, it's fine. When I'm in the office, I invariably develop this kind of debilitatingly painful gas and bloating over the day, and it gradually gets worse, and then kind of hours later, it grandly releases itself. And this almost never happens.
It grandly releases itself.
Yeah, it's kind of a euphemism.
I like it. I'm going to use it in future discussions.
Okay, good. And it almost never happens when I'm out of the office, and it almost always happens when I'm in the office. And I've performed a number of sanity checks. I have tried giving up coffee. Mm-hmm. I've given up alcohol. I've tracked my diet to look for trigger foods and systematically eliminating different foods. I've experimented with exercising at different points in the day. I have removed my desk and stood at my computer to see if the fact of sitting is doing something here. Mm-hmm. I have tried moving my office to a different building.
Whoa.
To see if there's something environmental in the building that's triggering it.
Whoa.
And I can manage it a little bit with diet and exercise, but I feel fundamentally different when I'm at work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just don't know. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. What do you teach? What's your subject?
I teach music and I teach green business.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah, two totally different fields.
Yeah. And what kind of office work do you do?
Oh, administrative work, paperwork and setting up classes and registering students and things.
Yeah. That sounds to me as though the teaching would be a lot more fun than the office work.
Well, yeah.
And I wonder if that could have anything to do with the
IBS. And IBS, of course, you have done a masterful job you've done a lot, including changing the office, moving buildings, changing buildings rather to see whether or not that would make a difference. A few things. What happens when you're on vacation?
I feel great.
You feel great. No bloating?
No.
No problems on vacation?
No.
Uh-huh. So I have a recommendation because this seems to happen at work. I would think that you might try a beta blocker.
Really?
Beta blockers are very interesting drugs because what they do is they take the adrenal response and they tamp it down. They don't stop the excitement of things, but they tamp it down. And that's why, for instance, a lot of musicians use it when they're in orchestras.
But what's exciting about doing paperwork at your desk?
It's that there's a stress involved where his adrenal gland is probably pushing out adrenaline, and then you're at work, and then that's affecting your bowel. So for some people, they feel sweaty. For other people, they may feel nauseous. What you're having is you're having some bowel issues, and your bowel is, I think, affected by the balance between your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous systems. And that's really – that regulates your bowels. It regulates flight or fight.
Mm-hmm.
Said it correctly. Thank you, Tom. And so I would recommend a minimal amount to see if it works. I'd start out with 10 milligrams of Inderol propanolol, but Inderol is easier to remember, was the name brand. I'd start out with 10 milligrams of Inderol a day and just see what happens. If that works and it seems to wear off because it's not a 24-hour pill, I would go to a beta blocker like Atenolol, A-T-E-N-O-L-O-L, which is a long-acting beta blocker, and I would try half of a 25-milligram tablet. See if that works. If not, I would go all the way up to 50 milligrams. See if that affects it.
Interesting.
That's what I would try. And I would do it because this is what's happening at work. Now, you may, after this, if it works and stops happening, after a month or two, you may be able to get off the beta blocker and see if you really need it. But I think what you have to relearn how to not have that adrenal response. And that happens when you're on vacation. There's no adrenal response. You're not having problems. Though it's clearly not diet and other issues.
I will try it. All right.
Thank you
very much.
You're welcome.
Yep. Appreciate the call. Thank you. You know, you said it right, and it didn't sound right to me, the fight or
flight. Flight or flight.
Yeah.
I finally got it. I said fright. I got so many emails that it began to frighten me. That people were so upset. Somebody was going to knock on my door and I was going to have to flee from there. It activated my
Or response. Fight one of the other.
Or fight. Yeah, me? Fight, come on. I'm a small, shrimpy guy. I did not learn how to fight. I learned how to leave. I was the one who fleed. I ran really fast.
1-800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. So, Zorba, you found a way to outwit the Grim Reaper.
Absolutely. You know, we've always wondered for years. Scientists have wondered, how fast does the Grim Reaper walk? You know, this has been a question that's been going on for millennia.
Yeah, well, he couldn't be too fast because he has to carry that sign.
He's got to carry the sickle. You can't really tell. You can't see his face. It's kind of dark, you know, but you look inside. You don't see anybody. The hood doesn't really flap in the wind when you see pictures of it,
yeah,
right? It doesn't
true.
Look like
that's
he runs.
True. That's true.
He's not running with the sickle. He's kind of walking.
Yeah.
This was a study out of the British Medical Journal, which was entitled How Fast Does the Grim Reaper Walk? And what they did was they had about 1,700 men. This was in Australia, so they're all Aussies. 1,700 men followed over a period of 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They did a walking test at the beginning, had them walk just 20 feet, said, how fast can you walk, and measured them.
Okay. 20 feet?
20 feet.
That's nothing.
That's nothing. So instead of the 20-yard dash for senior citizens,
yeah,
it was the 20-foot walk. That's what it was.
Okay.
Remember the 40-yard dash? Wasn't it the 40-yard dash when you were a kid? Obviously, I'm not ringing a bell. You
not
have
at
this.
All.
No, no. In Illinois, you did the 40-yard dash, and that determined whether or not you were fit or not fit.
No.
And David Schwartz always won the 40-yard dash. Wherever David Schwartz is, if you're out there, please send me an email.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah,
this is a 20-foot walk saying, okay, guys, walk as fast as you can. Measured okay. them.
Yeah.
And measured them periodically. Throughout the study, all of the guys were on an exercise program walking 4 or 5 miles a day. And here's what they discovered.
Wait a minute, they were walking 4 or 5 miles a day?
Mm-hmm, they were walking a good amount. You know, so they're walking. That was their goal. They weren't actually all succeeding. This was by diet. But they're trying to walk forward. They're trying to walk, you know, go on to a walking program. What they discovered was the guys who walked roughly 2.5, little over 2 miles an hour, between 2 and 2.5 miles fast. That was their mile per hour, okay? They're doing 2 miles per hour. None of them died. The guys who walked less than 2.5 miles an hour, about 150 of them died.
Yeah.
So they figure that the Grim Reaper of Death walks at about 2 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And if you can walk faster than 2 miles per hour, the Grim Reaper of Death will never catch up with you.
But I'm trying to get in my head, how can anybody walk 4 or 5 miles an hour a day who can't walk 2.5 miles an hour for 20 yards?
This was by diary. So obviously the ones who were not able to walk actually didn't succeed in walking that much. And when they went back and they looked at the data, you bring out a good point. What they found was that the people who were walking slower didn't exercise as much, didn't walk as far, and didn't keep up with their program. And the ones who were walking quicker did. And obviously, the ones who are walking quicker must be more fit to begin
with. I was going to say there's a cause and effect thing here.
100%. Yeah. On the other hand, if you're strolling when you're walking, what you want to do is try to pick up your speed.
Yeah.
Because there's a chicken and egg thing here. But on the other hand, if you say, well, I walked a couple of miles and you walked a couple of miles and it took you a couple of hours, it's not the same as if you walked a couple of miles and it took you 1 hour.
Yeah. So it's good. What I'm doing now is treadmill in a gym with other people next to
me on either side. And do you, Matt, how far do you walk on the treadmill?
I just do a couple of miles.
And how long?
And half an hour.
Well,
4 miles an hour.
4 miles an hour.
What's good is I feel competitive. So if the guy next to me is zipping along, I try to go a little faster.
I know exactly. But now the gym that I go to is at the university. So the people next to me are 20-year-olds, and you know what?
Oh,
I can't run. I had a guy next to me the other day. He was on the treadmill, and he was doing I don't know what you call them, and he was doing this fast running. He was on the treadmill, running as fast as he could. I looked at him and I thought, oh my God, he's going to fall off this treadmill. But of course, I mean, he was 18. He was not going to fall off the treadmill. I almost fell off the treadmill while I was looking at him.
800-462-7413. And a listener now, Zorba in Helena, Montana. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah. How can we help?
Well, my daughter has had an issue that I really relatively recently became aware of, but it's been going on for, I don't know, 20 years for her.
Mm-hmm.
periodically she will just, if she bumps herself even lightly, she passes out. And she has passed out when she's given blood at times. She likes to give blood regularly. Only once did it turn into a real long ordeal where she had trouble recovering from that. But my concern is she's 30 now. She has two children, and she has horses. And I think, well, gee whiz, you're out with the kids or even by yourself with those horses. You might bump yourself and be in a real predicament. And so I just wonder.
Tell me a little bit about what's going on.
Oh, just a couple. Well, it was about a month ago. We were at her house, and I peeked over, and I thought she was just plugging something into the wall right by her computer desk, and then I realized she was passed out.
Okay, so she's having drop attacks. In other words, all of a sudden she's doing something and she's on the floor.
It's only when she bumps herself.
But they're drop attacks. There's something going on that affects her body, and all of a sudden she's out. How long is she out for?
Maybe 1 minute.
That's a long time. It's not a short amount of time. Was she aware that she was out?
Afterwards, yes. She said she had wonderful dreams.
So she went into a dream state. She needs to see a neurologist.
Okay.
That's what she has to do. She's got to see a neurologist. She needs an EEG, a sleep-deprived EEG, to see whether or not she's having temporal lobe epilepsy, seizures. That's one question that's there. But she also has to see whether or not she's having drop attacks. There are things called narcolepsy and cataplexy. And narcolepsy and cataplexy are where you drop and all of a sudden go into a sleep state. And it's brought on by a whole bunch of different things. And there are medications that we can give for that. But as you said, there's a danger here. You're out with horses or you're with your children, and all of a sudden you're out of it. You're on the ground, and there's the danger of falling. And then there's the danger of actually taking care of the, you know, of your children, or you're going to put yourself in harm's way. But she needs a neurologist. I don't think there's a clear diagnosis here. And I think there's a danger. You know, you're 100% correct. Now, what happened after she gave blood, she felt a little faint. That's kind of a different issue. That is not terribly unusual. But she
actually was out, though. She passed out and had a seizure.
Oh, okay. So was she worked up by a neurologist at that time?
No.
Well, she should have.
She is a stubborn girl.
Well, she needs to. You are her mother. So now.
I know.
You are her mother. So now is the time for you to say, I spoke to this doctor on the radio. You had a seizure when you were at the Red Cross and you were giving blood, and you're having these drop attacks, and these are dangerous, and they're dangerous for your children, and frankly, they're dangerous driving a car.
Yeah.
What if she has a drop attack? She may kill herself, her children, or she may kill my child.
Okay. Well, gosh, now I'm panicked.
You should be panicked. And you know what? You're doing the right thing as a mom. Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you for the information, and we will leap into action here.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Before the break, Zorba, let's take a moment for another listener tip. Today's tip is for a recent caller who was a guitar player with some foot issues. You helped him out, but several of our listeners sent in their ideas, ranging from his sitting position to his footwear. A listener named J.P., who says he once shared a cab with you from O'Hare, takes note of the fact that the problem occurred more on tour, where the guitarist is likely to not be wearing comfortable shoes. JP writes, I have had Morton's Neurama since traveling up Escalante Canyon in two small running shoes 40 years ago. You never asked about the caller's footwear, but rock musicians can get pretty fashionable, and as far as I could hear, he was describing exactly the symptoms that I have when I wear shoes that are too tight. The point is that the neurologists all suggest that you can reduce this problem by putting orthotic insoles into your shoes and wearing wider ones in the first place.
Well, I think that's a great idea. And, you know, you bring up a good point. Not being a rock musician and not having a foot fetish, I never really noticed the footwear of rock musicians. And now that he brings it up, they probably wear these pointy shoes, and they're basically Morton's Neurama is more often than in women than in men. And women, of course, you know, wear footwear that basically squishes their toes together so it gets all squished up and produces that. So he brings up a really good point. I think that if you've got a Morton's neuroma, it's very important that you wear a shoe that allows your toes to fan. Fan your toes. Mm-hmm. Fan your toes.
Well, kick in your thoughts on lifestyle issues. Just send your helpful hints to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Well, you'll want to stick around. We have a really yummy recipe coming up. Lots more of your calls, another topic to talk about, and of course, our medical MythBuster. Plenty of great reasons for you to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before we get back to the phones, it is recipe time, and this one, Zorba, for roast beef pitas.
That's right. And you can. There's a variety of things that you can put on. We're going to use roast beef, but I want to talk about some other things. You know, a lot of, you know, most of us in the country are not vegetarians. You know, we're omnivores. A number of people are vegetarians, and others are vegans. Mm-hmm. But how do we take sandwiches, which we eat a lot of in America, make them taste good so that we actually eat less? And it may seem sort of odd and counterintuitive, but one of the problems that I think we have with overeating in America, we have these empty calories. We have food that really doesn't taste very good, so we consume large amounts of it to give us the, you know, to give us the satisfaction that we want. And if you look at the French, really, and the Italians and the Greeks, they weigh less because they eat tasty food in smaller amounts.
So if I understand it, the idea of the pita is that you can get some more healthy things
well,
in there that
pita,
you can't
and what we're
going to
put in here and what we're going to put in the sandwich and what we're going to do. You know, you have five things that you taste comes through smell, but your tongue tastes salt, sweet, sour, bitter, and something called umami.
Yeah.
And umami is this fullness that you taste.
Yeah, right.
And that is, and I think a lot of the food we get, you know, doesn't have that, and so we eat more of it. And that's part of the problem. So this came from Epicurus. I looked at it, and it's not just roast beef. So let's go into this and how you would make this. And pita, of course, is a wonderful taste. So start out with 1/2 pound of deli roast beef cut into strips.
Yeah. 1/2 pound deli roast beef cut into strips.
So you could use turkey. You could use chicken.
Sure.
You could use cold salmon on this. Do you like salmon?
Yeah, okay.
I happen to like salmon. Yeah. And if you've never had salmon cold, you should try it after it's cooked. It's delicious. I also have sometimes a white fish, such as whiting or cod, and I'll have it cold. So any sort of, if you will, an animal product that you'd like to have, you could put in here. But cut into strips, nice strips. 2 cups of shredded romaine lettuce.
2 cups of shredded romaine lettuce.
That's right. And you could substitute spinach if you wanted to. Spinach would be very good.
Yeah.
Okay. 1/2 cup of matchstick carrots.
1/2 cup of matchstick carrots.
And you know where to buy those in the grocery store, Tom?
Yes.
I won't ask where. But as you know, they're next to those little carrot things. They're matchstick carrots. And I don't know how they make them, but I would never cut my carrots into that.
Yeah.
1 cup of thinly sliced cucumber.
1 cup of thinly sliced cucumber.
1/2 cup of sliced red onion.
1/2 cup of sliced red onion.
1/4 cup of crumbled feta cheese.
1/4 cup of crumbled feta cheese.
That's right. Now, you could use blue cheese.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very, very good. You could use, but it should be a full-flavored type cheese. So it could be feta or blue cheese or something of that nature, which would be good.
Yeah.
4 whole wheat pita pockets.
Yeah. This is my gets to my question at the beginning of the recipe. You couldn't really do this on bread.
Right, right. That's right. Because so, it would fall all over the place.
Yeah,
so that's
the
right.
pita would contain this.
Exactly,
where
exactly.
The bread
right.
would not.
Because
yeah.
you've got to have a pie. You put it on bread, and the first thing you're going to do is eat it, and it's going to fly all over
yeah,
the place.
Right, exactly.
It's going to ruin your white shirt because it's going to stain your tie.
That I always
right.
wear.
Yeah. It's going to stain your tie. You've,
right.
got the whole thing.
Right.
Get to your dress pants that are out there and really cause something to happen to the Armani, the $3,000 Armani suit that
it.
You wished you had, but were now you're sorry that you put on that.
That's
morning.
Right. Okay.
Okay, now we've got a dressing. The dressing is going to be 2 tablespoonfuls of fat-free mayo.
2 big tea of fat-free mayonnaise.
Right. The most caloric sandwich in Subway happens to be the tuna. The tuna sandwich has more
because
calories than any other sandwich.
Because a lot of mayo.
Because of the mayo. That's
yeah.
exactly
yeah.
it. So, and fat-free mayo is great. Does it taste great? Yeah, it tastes really good. Does it taste as good as mayonnaise? I think it tastes 90% as good, not
yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
hey, you got to give – but you've got the feta on top of this, right, or the blue cheese.
Right. Right.
And that, if you will, is masking the lack of flavor that you get in fat-free mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. 2 tablespoonfuls of skim milk or 1% yeah. would be okay, too.
2 big tea, skim or 1% milk.
And a tablespoonful of apple cider vinegar.
Big tea, apple cider vinegar.
That's right. So combine the roast beef, as I said, or chicken or turkey, or cold fish if you want to, in a bowl with lettuce, carrots, cucumber, onion, feta in a nice large bowl. Toss it gently. Slice each pita pocket open if it's not open already.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff the beef and the lettuce filling into the pocket, and then in a separate bowl, whisk the mayonnaise, milk, and vinegar and drizzle the dressing over the pita and serve it. 260 calories.
Oh, that's
calories.
Good.
A tuna salad sandwich at Subway is 550 calories.
Yeah.
That's a lot of calories.
Yeah.
A Big Mac at McDonald's is 600 calories.
Mm-hmm.
A quarter pounder at McDonald's is 550 calories. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to put this, you know, into perspective. This is less than your average fast food sandwich, and frankly, this is not that difficult to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to get into preparing our own food because then we're more vested in it. We know what goes into it. We're going to eat better, and we're going to eat less for the most part.
Well, so tell us, please, where listeners can get this recipe.
Well, since we don't send this out by snail mail anymore, I think what you're going to have to do is come to our website at ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can go to all of our wonderful recipes. We've got our archives. You can see a picture of Tom and a picture of me. And you can sign up for our weekly podcast also. We podcast the complete show at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget to find us on Facebook.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I'd like to have some advice on what I've called my itchy arm syndrome, as there doesn't seem to be another name for it.
Mm-hmm.
It started about 5 or 6 years ago, started on one section of one arm, and has slowly worked its way up both arms. It starts off as an intense irritation. It burns, but when you look at it, you cannot see anything on the skin, no bumps, no cracks. It only happens in summer.
Hmm.
It doesn't matter what I'm wearing, whether I'm in the sun, not in the sun, hot or cold. I can get some relief by using a calming cream, but sometimes the irritation is so intense that I literally have to almost strip off and just scratch wherever I am. I did go to a dermatologist, and she suggested that maybe I was imagining it, because once you start scratching, you can imagine you are scratching. I also had the suggestion of using, you know, the equivalent of chili peppers to desensitize it, but my arms are so hot and burning that that really isn't a possibility. So I wonder what's the cause of it, as well as, you know, how I can treat it.
Can I suggest you might cure this by taking a trip to England?
I think the rain might help it, but apart from that, no, thank you.
I love it. And wait, this comment of I strip off whenever I can, so you're, I mean just that's it, I'm itching, so you just strip off your clothes wherever you are. And
literally, it's almost like having menopausal sweats put on your arm.
We should not be laughing. We should laughing, but there is a humor to it. So you went to a dermatologist, and she said she couldn't find anything, or he, and said it's all in your head.
Yeah.
It's all in your head. Okay, let's look at soaps. Soap you use is what?
I'm very careful about the soap we use because my daughter's got into everything organic. So I'm not one to shower six times a day or, you know, lather too much. So I do use, you know, gentle soaps.
Okay. Well, I've got some ideas here. This is in the summer, not in the wintertime, you said. Okay, in the summertime. You put lotions on your skin or you have not put lotion, and that has not done much or hasn't done anything at all?
Well, I mean, once it starts burning, then I, you know, I'll reach home and put on everything that I can. I finally found something called a calming cream. But, of course, you know, I've always gone through the manic stage of, you know, ripping my skin apart.
I'm getting an image of the manic stage.
I mean, my entire family says, stop itching. Stop itching. It's like a mantra in my house.
It's like a mantra in the house. That's right. And it doesn't do any good. They say, Mom, what are you doing? Okay. I have some suggestions. First of all, there is a neurogenic, if you will, itching where people, you know, they have an itch and then they continue to itch and it's problematic. It's not in your head, but it is in your head. Some of the sensation is in your arm and then it gets amplified in your head. So there are things that you can ignore and not ignore. Number one, have you taken antihistamines at all for this?
No, I used to take them in England and they would dry up the back of my throat.
Well, it depends on the antihistamine. I have a couple of recommendations. Number one, I would take either Claritin or Zyrtec in the morning. They're non-sedating. Zyrtec is actually slightly sedating, and Claritin isn't. But Zyrtec is a little more, is a little bit stronger than Claritin. So, and they're both in generics now. But I would start out with the generic Claritin. If that doesn't work, I would go to the Zyrtec in the day. If you're itching at night, I would take Benadryl, 25 milligrams at bedtime. That can make you sleepy. That's what I would do from that point of view. That's number one. Number two. When you are actually showering, you should not shower every day. I think there's a dryness issue. It should be every 2 days or 3 days. If your arms actually aren't dirty, you don't actually have to lather up on them. And if you are organic or not organic, you should use a soap that is not drying, such as Dove unscented soap. And Dove soap is generally unscented. That's what you want to use on your arms. The next thing you want to do is you want to put a cream such as Aquaphor or Eucerin on your arms to keep the moisture in. Aquaphor is AQUAPHOR and Eucerin is EUCERIN. And these are creams that you can put on your arm that will actually keep the moisture in. You can even use old-fashioned Vaseline, which works quite well. It's a little bit tacky. And what you want to do is put that on your arm before the itch. In other words, every day you want to make sure that you put this moisturizing cream on your arm and you put it on once or twice throughout the day. And this may stop the cycle.
Right.
I think you're getting into an itch cycle. And what happens is it starts and then it continues and you can't stop yourself. And the thing about itching that's so odd is as soon as we talk about it, we have an itch. Yeah. Like right now, I've got an itch behind my right shoulder that I'm scratching.
No, I'm scratching my head.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So as soon as we talk about it, itches are contagious. I think there's an itch virus, and I'm going to find the itch virus. But they are contagious. You look at it, and they're part of comedy. They're because they really are there. So we've got to break the cycle with the antihistamine and the cream, and I think this may help. And do let us know.
Okay, I will do. Thanks a lot.
Sure, we appreciate the call. Thank you. And Zorba, before we take one more short break, it's time for another installment of Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's dissent comes from several listeners. Today's dissent comes from several listeners and concerns your comments on honey as a sugar substitute. Beverly from Springfield, Missouri, sums up their argument nicely, writing, "Dear Zorba, I have to challenge you on this. Natural raw honey, that which has not been pasteurized or heated to kill bacteria, has beneficial properties. Or at least that is what I have read many times over the years. It is known to heal cuts, contain antioxidants, has been proven to regulate intestinal function, and to heal ulcers and upset stomachs. It soothes sore throats and helps to relieve allergy symptoms. Please address this issue again."
Well, those are all folk remedies for the usefulness of honey. And honey does have some usefulness. One of the problems in giving it to infants, especially if it's unpasteurized, unheated honey, we don't do that because they can get botulism from it. There were a number of cases. So you don't give it to little kids. But it's a sugar. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's a combination. I mean, it's a sweet, sugary substance that has some minor properties to it that we'd like to eat. Mm. Is it better? It causes obesity just like sugar does. On the other hand, it may be more satisfying. And I do think that folk remedies have a place, and that's where they fit. So I think there may be some properties with honey. On the other hand, it's a sweet.
A spoonful of sugar or honey makes the criticism go down. So send in your challenge to Zorba for our next episode of Disagreeing with the Doc. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a topic of interest coming up. We have lots more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster. Give us some more of your time, and we'll make it worth your while here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we take our next call, Medicare is changing the rules for hospitals, and you and I could be affected.
Right. Well, and all of us may be affected. And Medicare, the Healthcare Affordability Act, one of the issues was to stop readmissions or reduce, not mm-hmm. stop, but reduce readmission rates of patients to hospitals. And let me explain a little bit about hospital reimbursement. They get something called DRGs, Diagnostic Related Codes. It's just called DRG. And so if you come in for a heart attack, the hospital gets paid a certain amount of money, whether they're there for 5 days or 10 days or 15 or 20 days, same amount of money paid. And it's changed a little bit based on a longer length of stay.
So the incentive is for the hospitals to get rid of patients
right.
as soon as they can.
And frankly, that's worked out very well over the last 20 years because we've reduced length of stay within the hospital. People get home sooner, which actually has been better for their health. Mm-hmm. It's really a better situation. But the problem is the readmission rates. And one of the chief readmission rates is for something called congestive heart failure. That's a really, really common readmission rate. Person goes out of the hospital, gets readmitted, and the government wants to cut down on that, saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe you let them out too soon. Mm-hmm. And they're right. But one of the problems is when they get out, if they're poor people in a poor neighborhood, they're given instructions. One, they may not be able to read the instructions. Two, they may be able to read them, but they can't understand them. If you look at hospital instructions I have, they're awful.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not written in, you know, fourth grade English. They're written in like 12th grade English. They're not really very good. They may not be able to afford their medications, so they get out of the hospital and they don't take them, and so they're readmitted. And so hospitals in poor neighborhoods are going to be penalized, and they may end up closing up because they're not going to be able to survive.
I don't quite understand this. What you're saying is the patients now may spend more time in the hospital because there's a penalty for readmission. More time in the hospital, you would think, would help what you're talking
about. The
problem
is it's a more complex case than simply how long you stay in the hospital. It's staying in the hospital, and then it's the transition from the hospital home. And that may be what hospitals will now do. They may now make sure that a social worker goes to your house and makes sure that you get your medications. They may make sure that, indeed, you understand how your medications are and somebody follows up on the telephone because mm-hmm. that's what's going to reduce the readmission rate. It's not just hospital stay. It's that post-hospital stay.
Quick question. Does any of this have anything to do with the terrible deficit that Medicare is running?
Oh, I don't think so at all. I don't think this has anything to do with the deficit. I think this is good medicine. And I think, frankly, it's going to mean that hospitals are going to spend a bit more time on the transition from sick patients home to make sure they're not readmitted. I think ultimately this is going to be a good thing and will improve medical care.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Back to the phone, Zorba, and a listener in Friendswood, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
We are house hunting, and there is a house that we like that we're thinking about purchasing. I noticed that there is a field of power lines that run behind the house. It's actually sandwiched between two subdivisions. And I went and talked to the power company. He told me that those lines are high voltage transmission lines that go a long way, running several miles. So I live on the internet, and you know, I've read up on electromagnetic fields, and there have been some talk about people worrying about it causing cancer, particularly childhood leukemia. But what I gather is that the link is weak to prove that, and you know, or inconclusive, I guess. So I was just wondering what Dr. Zorber's idea was about living in areas where you have, you know, these power lines that are running straight through neighborhoods and stuff like that, above ground, not necessarily underground.
And Zorba, I can guarantee that whatever your answer is to this, you will hear from other listeners.
Oh, of course. Of course I will hear. you know, it's I find a very interesting issue, and it turns out that one of my patients is one of the country's experts on high voltage lines and whether or not it affects milk production. It's a big thing in Wisconsin. That's where it started. He goes all over the country talking about it. He's a high voltage expert, an engineer who initially, this is sort of his second job in life. He initially was just an electrical engineer, had an interest in it, and then did a lot of research. The scientific research that is well-based does not show that there's any evidence that this causes childhood leukemia and other things. There's no evidence of that. Now, there's a huge group out there that does not believe this research. One part of that group are lawyers. And they're very supportive of this because they go and they sue electrical companies, and sometimes they win. They lose, I don't know, two or three out of four suits, but one out of four suits they win. So there's a monetary issue. You always have to question that. The other thing is anyone can put up a website. If you go to oneplusone.com, you can get a website with a little a template on the website for about $5 a month. So you can put a high voltage website up there, and that may, you know, you can state whatever you want to state. But as you said, the scientific evidence is outrageously weak. It doesn't really show anything there. Now, could there be something there? Well, my thought is if you're worried about it, you don't live in that area. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's what it is. If it's something that really concerns you, then you don't live in the area. But if you look at people, for instance, in urban areas that live near highways, the air pollution near highways, there's a good link there. Nobody discusses that. They're worried about high voltage wires, but what about the carbon monoxide coming out of cars because you happen to live on a busy street in the middle of the city of Chicago? You know, that's we know that that air pollution causes problems and environmental issues. So I think this is a very minor issue. That's what I think. But people are – they're religious about it. There's a fervor out there about how high voltage causes many, many problems. And I just want to go back to the fact that this is an old problem, that when radio first came out and they started broadcasting, there was a hue and cry on these waves are going out to all of us and they're going to destroy us. And people were quite worried about getting leukemia and other things from radio waves in the 1920s and 1930s. And there's no evidence, of course, that it does so. Good luck to you, and send us a photo of the house if you buy it.
I sure will. Thank you so much. Yeah. I love your laugh.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. We have a listener myth today about something we've recommended quite a few times here on the show, the neti pot. Because of this, several listeners want your take on recent news claiming that neti pots can be deadly.
That's right. That's right. Neti pot deaths. So doing some research, the Louisiana health regulators warned the dangers of using a neti pot improperly because, you know, these are little genie lamps. You've seen pictures of them to irrigate the sinuses. And apparently there was amoeba in the water that someone was using to irrigate through their nose. This brain-eating amoeba went into their body. Two deaths went into their brain and killed them from the neti pot. Well, my first question is, amoeba is not supposed to be in the water supply. I mean, come on. You have a water supply. It's not supposed to have amoeba in it. And you say you shouldn't have to worry about amoeba.
But there are recommendations that we shouldn't use these neti pots now without boiling the water.
Well, you've got a couple options. Right in front of me, I have a bottled water manufactured by Pepsi-Cola Company.
Yeah.
You could use bottled water for $1 from the Pepsi-Cola Company. Yeah. You could buy a quart of bottled water and use that in your neti pot. You can't throw out the baby with the bathwater or the neti pot with the tap water from Louisiana. Now, what I think the people in Louisiana where this happened should do is say, why are there amoeba in our water supply? I mean, there shouldn't be there, and they're causing intestinal problems. Don't blame the neti pot. I mean, I saw this printout. It said, don't use the neti pot. The answer is, what's happening at the source? What's happening with their water? But I think neti pots are 100% safe. If you're worried about tap water, then use bottled water, right? Mm-hmm. Buy it. I mean, it's cheap. It's inexpensive. Or boil the water yourself. But keep on using those neti pots. They help.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Why don't we take another call now at 800-462-7413. Here's a listener in Carterville, Illinois. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have a question. I'm looking for a natural remedy, or I'm a smoker, and I'm looking to quit. I probably smoke less than a pack a day. I do exercise. I exercise up to 3 times a week, and I've noticed that my cravings do decrease greatly when I do, but sometimes because of family or life, I don't get a chance to exercise, and it has increased, you know, the cravings increase kind of hand in hand with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I tried the patch at one time, and it gave me some very strange and odd dreams. So I guess I'm just looking for maybe some advice or some natural supplements or something that I could take that would just kind of help me get over the hump.
Oh, sure. You know, cravings are a great difficulty with smoking. I smoked when I was in college, and I remember it took me 4 times to quit.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long time. It was the 4th time I finally said, I just can't do this. And the cravings continued, and they still continue today. If I have a sausage pizza and Coca-Cola, periodically, it has to be a Chicago sausage pizza and a Coca-Cola. All of a sudden, I'll want a Marlboro. It's a very, very strange thing. I haven't smoked in over 30 years, but it'll come over me. I just want to sit there with the Marlboro. I mean, I can feel it in my fingers. It's a very, very strange thing. And clearly, we're hardwired, and it affects one part of our brain. As you know, the medications that help are things like Chantix, that's one set, bupropion, which is an antidepressant, and of course the nicotine replacement, either through the inhaler, the patch, the gum, the lozenge, and so on, and they can be very helpful. Natural foods, anything that you can eat that you can eat and crave that you will like. So if you're looking for a natural food lozenge, that would be something that would be very useful for you to have. Chewing on different things, there's a whole bunch of natural food remedies, and if you go to a good natural food store, they'll give you some recommendations for that. And many of these things really help with the craving because tobacco is a natural product. It is manufactured, but it's a natural product. Let me ask you, when was the last time you tried to stop?
About 4 months ago.
How long did you last?
About 2 weeks, but it was mostly because of the sleep. That's when I was trying the patch.
Mm-hmm. So you were off for 2 weeks without any cigarettes at all?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then what happened? When did you fall off the wagon?
I wasn't able to exercise. It actually happened to be a break.
Uh-huh.
My kids at school and everything, so I wasn't able to get.
Uh-huh. So the exercise was the issue. Was it associated with alcohol? Did you have a drink and then have a smoke?
No, I've also noticed, I'm a mechanic by trade,
mm-hmm.
and I've also noticed that when I'm busy, I won't stop what I'm doing, or any kind of work, even around the house.
Mm-hmm.
I won't stop what I'm doing to have a cigarette.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good.
It's not that overpowering of a craving.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to put a link on our website also, a quit smoking link. There's at the University of Wisconsin, there's a cancer intervention and tobacco center at the University of Wisconsin. We'll put a link on our website to that. They have lots and lots of good tips on how you can quit. So if you come to our website, zorbapastor.org, you can either Google that or you can come through Facebook. Get to that website. We'll put a link on there, and that'll help you. So I've got some really good recommendations, and this website is really where I would look for them.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck to you. Most important thing you can do is quit that habit.
And before we punch out for the week, Zorba, we have a series of small fines to pay to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. Mark in Oklahoma City offers up your first count, writing, "Doc Zorba, concurrently, at the same time, please. That's redundant and repetitious." Next up is Margot, who informs you of a shocking problem. "I feel compelled to write correcting your usage of the word electrocute, which means to die by electricity. You asked the gentleman caller if he had ever been electrocuted. If he had, he would not have been able to respond to you." Finally.
Like, are you dead? Or when you ask somebody, are you sleeping? And if they answer, right.
Finally, newly founded Literary Police Deputy Deb is not alone in her criticism of your rosy, quote, credits, writing, "I heard you credit Edna St. Vincent Millay with A Rose is a Rose. Author of that line is, in fact, Gertrude Stein.
That's right. Sorry.
From Sacred Emily 1913, who actually wrote, I didn't know this, "Rose is a Rose is a Rose." That first rose being
rose.
A person.
Oh, I didn't know that. Rose is a rose. Is a rose.
And contrary to popular belief, the saying doesn't mean it is what it is, but rather suggests that the words, names, evoke associations and imagery.
Well, that may be back in 1913.
Yeah, but now
it means, let me tell you, a rose is a rose is a rose, and that itself stands by itself. So I stand corrected with my quote, but I'm sorry. A rose is a rose.
is a rose. If you want to join the Zorba Pastor on Your Health, Grammar, or Literary Police, you can do so by sending an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Friedrich and technical director Brad Kohlberg, the Anthony Bourdain and Gordon Ramsay of our control room kitchen, are the two guys responsible for this hour.
Who's Anthony? That's what I want to know.
Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0107Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.